In the sitcom television show Parks and Recreation, there is a character in there, Ron Swanson, that I very much love. He has all these very memorable quotes in it. One of which that I love, he says, in every man's life, there are only two times that he should ever cry. The first is when he attends funerals, and the second is when he sees the Grand Canyon for the first time. And I think that's absolutely true. I don't know if you've ever been to the Grand Canyon, but it is one of nature's greatest wonders. I had the chance to go 2 years ago when we took our trip out to Colorado with our high school kids from Indianapolis. And we hiked in the Rockies and then we made our way over to the Grand Canyon. And I remember it was my first time going and people were trying to explain, you know, what it was like, you know, what the Grand Canyon was like and how big it was and how majestic it was. You know, in photos that we'd seen and videos, but they also made it very clear you just had to experience it for yourself. And so we got there and I remember, you know, you go right up to the railing and you look out and it's just massive to see the other side of the rim. It's just this huge hole in the ground, you know, just massive chasm. And the park rangers were telling us that of all the visitors that come every year to see the Grand Canyon, 90% of them only ever get to the railing. They don't even take a step into the Grand Canyon itself on any of the trails that they have. 10% do. 10% go into the Grand Canyon at least a little bit. And of that 10%, only 1% of the visitors actually go all the way down to the very core of the Grand Canyon where the Colorado River flows through it. Of course, you know, being young and adventurous and on this trip with these high school kids, we were like, let's do it. You know, like, let's go the distance. Let's go the 9 miles down into the Grand Canyon and then 9 miles back out. And so we planned it out, you know, that one day we were going to do the whole trek in a single day. And so we got our water ready, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, here I am, you know, young guy, like, you know, I haven't been working out recently, but I'm in good enough shape, you know, I could do this. We get started, you know, going down the Grand Canyon, and we should have known better. There were signs along the way that said, beware, do not attempt to go to the bottom and back up in a single day. Like, it was very clear, do not do this. Ah, they don't know what they're talking about. So we go down the switchbacks, easy, you know, 9 miles downhill, no problem. We're singing, you know, we're just having a great time going down. We get to the bottom and you just look around you and you're surrounded by these beautiful red rocks. You know, the canyon gorge is just spectacular. It's magnificent. You bathe your feet in the crystal clear waters of the Colorado River, you know, and you just take in the magnitude of God's creation down there. And then we began to hike out. And it wasn't, you know, it isn't a ramp going up these switchbacks for 9 miles. It's stair steps, basically. And so here we go. In the first 3 miles, okay, you know, not bad. After the first 3 miles coming back out, though, I could tell my right leg was starting to cramp up a little bit. And I was like, no big deal. I'll just start stepping up with my left leg. Well, then it started cramping up. And I got to the point that we had 3 miles left to go, you know, and I am just dying. Like, I'm going like 100 yards and stopping to rest, and then another 100 yards and stopping to rest. The high school kids that were with us, you know, these are like cross-country runners, track runners, best shape of their life, and they're like, you know, a couple switchbacks above us, you know, just speeding along, and they kept looking down at us, and they were like, come on, Father Dan, you can do it. And I remember looking back up and just being like, you know, and... So painstakingly, you know, we worked our way out of the Grand Canyon because there's no other way out. You know, there's no elevator, there's no shortcut. You know, in fact, if you get stuck down there, it's like a $20,000 helicopter ride, you know, to get out of there. So here we are, you know, just 100-yard stop, 100-yard stop. We finally made it out. And I remember just chugging a ton of Gatorade, just trying, you know, to get those electrolytes back in you. And we showed back up at camp, you know, later than everybody else. We were way behind, me and this other chaperone, Judd, who kind of was my saving grace, kept, you know, encouraging me to go. And we got back and someone, you know, they could tell we were just exhausted and they asked, was it worth it? You know, was it worth it to go all the way down there and back out looking the way you do? And I realized what they told me in the beginning was true. Whatever anybody said about the Grand Canyon, whatever videos I'd seen or pictures, they didn't do it justice. You had to experience it for yourself. And so recognizing that fact and knowing that there was no other way for me to see the grandeur of it, I said, yeah, it was absolutely worth it. There are certain things in our life that you just have to do on your own. You have to experience it for yourself. People can talk about their experiences, you can read it in a book, you can look up in manuals, but unless you experience it, you're missing out. There are certain things that cannot be shared with another human being. Certain experiences, certain things that we do that just cannot be conveyed. And so I think, to some degree, we can cut a little slack to the five wise virgins in today's gospel. Here they have these flasks of oil with them, and they're unwilling to share it with the five foolish ones. And at first glance, that looks very uncharitable. You know, we look back and we're just like, how unchristian of them to have this oil and not share it with these poor women who forgot to bring their own oil. But what if that oil represents something more? What if it represents those things in our spiritual life that cannot be shared? What if it represents the time that they dedicate to God? What if it represents all the prayers that they've said, all the labors that they've intensely went through, dedicated to God? Those are things that cannot be shared. Nobody can pray on your behalf. Nobody can put in the time for a relationship with God. For you. Nobody can take a holy hour in the Adoration Chapel and account towards your salvation. There are certain things that we must do for ourselves, and they cannot be shared. But if we do, something amazing happens. Now, I remember my first Easter vigil that ever went on. And if you've never been to the Easter Vigil, that night before Easter itself, it'll be at St. Margaret Mary's this year. I highly encourage you to go. It's a beautiful liturgy. And it always starts outside. There's the bonfire outside, and we bless the fire outside the doors of the church before coming in. And that year, for whatever reason, whoever was in charge of the fire didn't know what they were doing. And so we got outside. The whole, you know, all the parishioners, the priest, everybody was outside, and we just had a bunch of logs in a fire pit. No fire. And we're like, well, what do we do? You know, the priest is kind of getting frustrated. I mean, there's nothing to bless. And finally, one of the local farmers there, Ford Canelli was his name, he was just like, this is ridiculous, you know. And so he wanders off to his pickup truck, pulls out a big container of lighter fluid and a blowtorch. He's like, I'll take care of this. And he comes on over, you know, and just douses, you know, the logs with this lighter fluid. And sets it aflame, you know, with the blowtorch, and we had a fire. You know, I'm still convinced to this day that the wood never caught. Like, it was just lighter fluid that was just burning continuously. But we had a fire. And the priest blessed it. And from that fire, that blessed, sacred flame, we lit the Easter candle. And we processed in the doors of the church singing the light of Christ. And each one of us had our own candle. And we reached up and we lit it from the Easter candle. And suddenly, the darkness of the church wasn't so dark anymore. Suddenly we looked around and realized that we were alive with the flame of Christ. And that flame that burns in our hearts when that oil is there, when the foundation is laid, is an eternal flame. It's a flame that does not die out, but stands out as a light in the darkness, a city set on the hill. A light that this world is yearning for and searching for with every ounce of its being, trying to find. And we have it. And what's more, when that flame is alive in your heart, when that blaze of glory is there, It burns away everything that's ungodly in us. It burns with such a passion that everything that is fearful or anxious or worrisome, anything that's doubting or sinful, is burned away. It's vanquished in that fire. And the fire becomes familiar to us. We see that light and we know it. And so when our days on this earth are done and we make that final journey from death to new life and we see the everlasting flame, the original flame, the divine spark, we'll know it. We'll recognize it. And what's more, it will know us. He will know us. Make time for the oil, and I can guarantee the fire will come. Amen.